About 5,000 houses were completely destroyed. Those houses remained unbuilt, unreconstructed for about 2 years until the tunnels solved some of the problems. Some construction materials started coming in through the tunnels, and then after the tunnels started working and we started getting some construction materials, Israel allowed some other construction materials to get into Gaza through UNRWA. So for 2 years, people were staying at their relatives or at whatever shelter they could provide. This tragedy now, if the siege is not lifted, it shall be repeated again, and for God knows how long. It might continue forever until the siege is lifted, because now even the tunnels that were used to find temporary solution are gone by now.
You have a final comment, Dr. Bilal Dabur. I'm seeing a tweet that's coming right from the AP office where you are standing, overlooking Gaza City, that says large parts of Gaza City are now being shelled by artillery. Your final comment.
My final comment is that, as a doctor, if this situation was an illness, I would prescribe this medicine. As Dr. Maz Gilbert said, the best medicine is first, number one, stop the assault immediately, and number two, stop the siege, and number three, lift the occupation. But the most important now is for these massacres to stop, and number two is for the siege to be lifted, to allow the thousands of houses and the hospitals and the centers that were hit in this war, in addition to the previous inhumane circumstances, to allow them to be lifted at least. And then we can discuss number three, the lifting of the occupation. But number one, stop the killing immediately.
Dr. Bilal Dabur, I thank you for being with us. I see that just behind your head, there is smoke coming up. If you step, just shift aside, we will see what is directly behind you. That's right. Dr. Bilal Dabur, please stay safe. Works at the Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. His piece at the Electronic Intifada called The Boy Who Clung to the Paramedic, the story behind the photo. That does it for the show. I'll be speaking on Real Time with Bill Maher tonight on HBO, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Tomorrow night, I'll be speaking Martha's Vineyard. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronick with you, station advisor here at WHFR.fm, the station making waves. And of course, this program is all about making waves. It's keeping you informed, digging a little bit deeper about local issues that other stations and media just don't do. We give you a bit of opinion, too, a little background, I should say, at the outset, and this applies for the whole hour, that the opinions expressed here on the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. They are originating from the people right here at WHFR and the people that I will be presenting to you. It is July 25th, 2014. If you're listening on the podcast, I hope it's a good day for you. Obviously, you can listen anytime after broadcast. If you miss the show someday, always listen live. If you miss it, it's recorded and available immediately after broadcast on for months and months. So all you have to do is go to our website, whfr.fm, click on Talk Shows, click on WHFR Journal, and then select the appropriate date, and you can listen directly from the website or download the MP3 file to one of your mobile devices and take it with you while you're jogging or something. So we want to keep the beat up and the rhythm up if you are jogging to the show. The big top story of the day, what will we do for the rest of the hour after we cover this? I don't know, but it's going to be a great show. Let me just tell you that, great show. Is the one that's in the Press and Guide on page one from this last Wednesday, but Here's actually a little bit more complete story, I'm sorry to say, than the Press and Guide has. This is from mlive.com from July 21st. That would be Tuesday, I believe. Yeah. Monday. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Time flies. Boy, Monday. So anyway, so this would, all this information would be in, it would have been in time to be published in the Press and Guide, but for some reason it wasn't. And there's one big bit of it that we think should be shared with people in the community and so on. But here's the story. Russian steelmaker OAO Severstal. That's her full name. Never heard the OAO. I wonder if that's like incorporated, but starts at the beginning. Anyway, OAO Severstal sold its plant in Dearborn for $700 million. The sale was announced Monday morning in connection to the company liquidating all of its North American operations. They also included a facility in Mississippi. Both factories were sold for a total of more than $2.3 billion in separate deals to Steel Dynamics Incorporated and AK Steel Corporation. Both U.S. companies, by the way. The Dearborn facility, which Severstal invested $1.4 billion in just 2 years ago, was purchased by Ohio-based AK Steel, according to the press release. The acquisition includes all of the facility's steelmaking assets, a coke-making facility, and interest, that's not Coca-Cola, of course, folks, you know, and interest in three joint ventures that process flat-rolled steel products. James L. Wainscott, AK Steel chairman, president and CEO, said the company welcomes the employees of the Dearborn facility to the company. Now, this is information that's not in the Press and Guide story, but I think it's important because there's something like 1,400 people that work in the Dearborn plant. One is a close friend, an alumnus of WHFR, by the way, loves the job, just hated the idea of the increasing pollution that her company, the company she was working for, Severstal, was putting into the air in East Dearborn. Didn't like that on her conscience, but she said it was a good job close to home and so on. Well, she's not sure what's going to happen, but the important thing is that Mr. Wainscott, chairman, president, and CEO of AK Steel, did say that they welcome the employees of the Dearborn facility to the company. And well, they should, because these people know how to do the job. They're not, as I understand it, going to physically change any of the operation, at least not initially, any of the technology, any of the manufacturing products of that steel plant. In fact, that $1.4 billion in flat-rolled steel products really made it a great incentive, something to pick up on for only $700 million. Obviously, they really could use, for the sake of continuity, continued profits, and of course, they don't have to go through the old human resources processes of hiring new people, too, even though they might find some people, who knows, that have some special qualifications that they would prefer to have. But in any event, it looks like they're welcome. It says literally they welcome, AK Steel says they welcome the employees of the Dearborn facility to the company, but they didn't give any details as of yet. That was just the first press release, of course. By the way, how much steel do they produce over there? 2.5 million tons of finished steel per year. Now, just remembering that, because you might say, well, they had to take quite a loss if they put $1.4 billion in and they only got $700 million 2 years later. Yeah, but how much did they sell the over 2 years, 5 million tons of finished steel? What would you pay for a ton of finished steel? You know, already processed, all shiny, all ready to use for whatever your products are. Well, I don't know. I would think $1,000 for a ton of finished steel? More? And what's the profit margin? I probably huge. Of course, running the plant is not cheap. But I think Severstal probably broke even, at least, on their improvements. And what made them sell? Well, it could have been the complaints about pollution that came from residents of especially East Dearborn. But nah, nobody ever worries about that, especially after the whole thing was adjudicated by the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, and they said, oh, yeah, you can, even though we've just given you 38 citations over the last, what, 6 years or so you've been in Dearborn for polluting, we'll just change the criteria, the pollution levels, and you're fine. You're good to go. Just keep on doing what you're doing, which is more pollution than actually what they promised they would do at the beginning. Okay? So, you know, MDEQ, I don't know what all the details are of the case. There's a lot of legality, but also I'm sure political pressure from certain people saying, oh, we want that business to stay in Dearborn. Oh, yeah, that's 1,400 jobs. And, well, what are you going to do with a plant like that? It has to be sold to another steel company. They're not going to be able to afford to tear it down and build condos or a shopping center. You know, this is heavy-duty factory equipment and facilities. You're not going to easily be able to tear that down and start up with something else. So, of course, it's going to be another steel plant. And so you're not going to lose those jobs. And especially since they invested in all this special equipment 2 years ago, which is, means it's state-of-the-art now for steel production in the U.S. to compete with the best in the world. So it wasn't the complaint about pollution from the people of Dearborn, because as I said, the MDEQ said, oh, that's okay, just keep doing it. You know, shame on them, shame on the state of Michigan, shame on the governor for in any way supporting that and the people on that commission. I think you could unappoint them if you wanted to, you know. And then George DeRaney and other representatives from Michigan complained to the federal government. I think it was Rashid Tlaib, the other congressperson from the East Dearborn area. The two of them made a request to the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, of the federal government and said, investigate this. This is a lot of extra pollution that hurts this area. And, you know, review what the state said and did. Come on in. Now, to my knowledge, I thought that was an outside, really an outside chance that they would investigate. They're pretty busy with global warming, climate change issues, and pollution all over the place from many industries in the United States. They don't have the funds needed. And, of course, Republicans in Congress, as of today, have a bill to gut the funds of the EPA. That's right. That's right. Because we don't want them to continue reducing pollution and eliminating the pollution that's already being caused. No, that would hurt business, you say. And I don't think so. I think business is doing the job wrong. I think other businesses can come in and do it in a less polluting way if you give them a chance, which means get them out if they're polluting. Don't just fine them, because they're making so much money while they're polluting, they can probably pay the fines. Threaten to send them to jail. Let me do a little aside here, and this is my opinion, of course, but this whole thing about corporations are people, as Mitt Romney blatantly said, and the Supreme Court said in a different way, a little more precisely, but Romney said, hey, corporations are people too. Yeah, if they're people too, okay, 2 points. One is, let them pay average person income taxes. Yeah, let them pay if they're making more than, $100,000 a year. Let them pay the full amount that we all as individuals have to pay. And for that matter, don't give exemptions or have loopholes for anybody or anything. That's just stupid, okay? All activities, if you believe in the free market, folks, all activities should be considered equal if you choose to do them. And get rid of those loopholes. So if corporations are people too, let them pay 30% of their profits, of their income. Yeah, like the rest of us. And guess what? It just dawned on me this morning. If corporations are people too, and they commit a crime, like polluting the air, send them to jail. Or if you fine them, fine everybody that works at the company. That'll make the workers a little self-conscious, like our WHFR alumnus, if they would have fined everybody at Severstal a portion, a percentage, based on their pay scale, for the polluting that they've done here in Dearborn, those 36 times that they were caught, 38 times that they were caught. I bet they would have stopped polluting. And maybe maybe even the workers would have gone on strike, saying, look, we don't want to have to pay this same percentage out of our wages, even though it's a lot less than the corporate bosses. But they would have done made a little pressure too. Or maybe they would have quit and gone to a company that didn't pollute, even though that would have been risky. Something to nudge their conscience on. So if corporations are people too, let's go all the way. Let's tax them the way the rest of us as individuals have to be taxed. And let's send them to jail. Or fine every single one of them based on a percentage of their incomes when they do things wrong, like hurting the environment and making products like GM does still that harm us, that are released knowingly by them, even though they have defects. I mean, there's almost 700 million cars, is it, or 70 million? Anyway, GM every few days now. Of course, they're trying to be careful and not get into more trouble with the federal government or have more testimony they have to give. Mary Barra still sort of fighting for her job, even though she was part of the problem. She was part of the system when all these things were built and designed badly and knowingly were faulty. When they found out about the fault, they knowingly let it go until they got caught. Okay. Now she says she's turned the place around and they're different, but look at all the faults they found now or realize they have. And yes, finally, even though I know for last month GM sales were up overall in the U.S., they're now losing money. Of course, because of the payouts that they agreed to do for some of the people that have been harmed or killed by these faults that, you know, I mean, mistakes happen. And when they're discovered, they should be immediately acted on. Don't put it off and say, well, if a few sue us, it's less costly to pay them off than to fix the thing. That's what Ford Motor Company said about their infamous Pinto hatchbacks back in the 60s. And that came to haunt them for a few years too, or a few decades, I still remember. So we can't let that happen. And the Severstal facility is sold. That's the headline news for today and probably for the next week. By the way, they bought it themselves in 2004 for only $285 million. From whom? Ford Motor Company. Of course, there's inflation involved, but that was only 10 years ago, folks. Of course, they put $1.4 billion in there just 2 years ago, so that raised the value right there. But I think they got it for a song. No wonder they bought it. But I think the threat of federal government regulation, and if the EPA gets involved in Dearborn, maybe they would have got involved on their other facility in Mississippi, because you know the federal government goes all over the country. All the states are part of the federal government. So EPA could have set down some new rules about steel plants in the U.S., and then they would have had trouble. So Severstal, I bet, though, with all the profit you make from 5 million tons over the last 2 years of finished steel, ready to go, beautiful, shiny steel, I bet they're going to just relocate to a third world country somewhere else. It's an international corporation, of course, I know, based in Russia, but what does that mean these days? And they're going to go to a third world country that'd be happy to welcome them in, and they don't have any pollution regulations whatsoever. So Severstal will be able to just, again, pollute like crazy, lower manufacturing costs, and they can still make all the steel and even higher profits in some other third world country, while they're endangering the environment of the world. That's what I think. But it's just a business decision. Hey, corporations have no soul, even though they're supposed to be people. They have no morality except profit. That's number one. It has to be number one, or you're not going to be a business, right? But you'd think that there would be a close second, which would be concern for your workers and the environment. Second and third, you figure out which goes where. But these days, international corporations, they don't care. They say, well, we can't care. We're a business. We're trying to make profits for our stockholders or our private owners. I'm not sure I think Severstal is owned by private big shot Russians. I don't think there's any stock involved. Well, the question was unanswered in both. Now, the fact that the 1,400 Dearborn people that are working there here in Dearborn at the Severstal plant are welcomed by the new company, a U.S. company, is good. We'll see if that holds up. We'll see if they're really welcomed with open arms and given their same jobs and the same pay or better. Let's hope for their sake. But the part of it we didn't get, and you'd think at least the Press and Guide would have tried to get a reaction from Mayor O'Reilly's office, is that Severstal money, and what was it going to be, $10 million? $8 million did they get it down to? Whatever. Severstal promised money years ago, you know the story if you listen to the show, for a conference center that would be named after Severstal at the Hyatt Regency. Well, we lost the Hyatt Regency and conference center, because who wants to come to Dearborn when we're all broke and everything is being resold? Wasn't a good time in 2008. And so the deal was still on the table, though. And last couple of years, the city of Dearborn said, look, you offered this, by golly, and we'll take the money, but we want to use it for something else. And as you heard on the show a couple of weeks back, the city's going to use it for a variety of things, a little bit here, a little bit there, but a lot of it going to the new City Hall location or the new building that's going to be called Administrative City Services or something. Anyway, further west on Michigan Avenue, which they hope to move into maybe this fall. We'll try to get the word from Mayor O'Reilly and others at Dearborn Homecoming next weekend. For a second and third, we'll grab anybody that knows anything. While we're out there broadcasting from 11 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night with special interviews from Dearborn Homecoming, as well as all of the reports about what's going on and what the best food is. We always have our food reports and what entertainment is coming up next for free. All of that news will be coming to you live from Dearborn Homecoming. Come on down and visit our tent. You'll see us broadcasting, meet our DJs, our volunteer staff. I'll be down there all 3 days, one time or the other, and we'll be doing this show, the new WHFR Journal, live from 1 to 2 o'clock, weather and technology permitting. Okay, but we intend to be there. We're going to have that special line installed, and by golly, unless it's really storming badly, we don't want to get electrocuted or something, but we're going to be out there. And it's going to be fun, as it always is. We've been part of Dearborn Homecoming since about 1988, I believe, sometimes unofficially, because for a while there was sort of a ban on radio and TV stations doing anything at Dearborn Homecoming, because, and this is true, under administrations 30 years ago, they didn't want the radio stations, which typically broadcast beyond the boundaries of Dearborn, as ours does too, 8 miles, 10 mile range. Oh boy, that goes beyond the city limits of Dearborn. And so in those days, 30 years ago, get this. Now this is off the record, but certain people told me they didn't want to get the word out about Dearborn Homecoming to people outside of Dearborn. They didn't want those outsiders to come in. Now, if that's code, then you probably can decode it, okay? I don't have to do that for you, but that's what they said. However, thanks to support from Henry Ford College, Henry Ford Community College then, and certain people in the Recreation Department and in the Dearborn Community Arts Council, we got a spot of our own, and we've been in that same location for the last couple of years, but we've been officially broadcasting and supporting the whole event since about 1995, I think, officially, even though we've been there since 88 with the booth and doing broadcast sometimes by a cell phone. Yeah, the early bag-type cell phone. Yeah, the big batteries and the phone itself weighs 5 pounds. We did that. Yeah. The first ones broadcasting from Dearborn Homecoming, WHFR. And we're going to be back there is what I'm saying. So we'll try to find out what's happening about that Severstal money, because it's true. The city of Dearborn said, now we figured out officially where that money is going to go. Did they sign the deal? did Severstal actually sign the deal? And did it say, was there a small clause that if we no longer exist in the United States, this is null and void? Is that a catchphrase, or did they actually sign something? Maybe they didn't even sign their part of the agreement yet. Will they pay that money out? Kind of be nice to have. A lot of remodeling needed for the Administrative Services Center, for the new City Hall, and the other purposes that they, you know, City Council, I think we don't want to just put all the money to one thing, because then some people in the community will carp. So we're going to put a little money into a fountain maybe somewhere, or into a park, and we'll get a little money here, a little money there. Everybody gets a little something, and a lot goes to the new City Hall, and money to Art Space, too, because they've got to raise a lot of money to actually move into the old City Hall to renovate it. I haven't heard the word whether they actually have raised all the money they need from various sources to do everything they need to actually create it as a gallery and a living space for artists. Now, they've never had any trouble raising all the money in previous Art Space locations around the country. One way or the other, they always found enough money to do that. But these days, money is a little bit harder to come by than it used to be, especially with grants and nonprofit foundations being hit up for more money by more people because the money's not available from government sources anymore. So, we'll have to wait and see how that twists and turns. Those are the two issues. And as I said, the pressing guy didn't get either important Dearborn issue this week. This is a comment about the pressing guy. They wanted people to make comments about the new look. The paper chose a different font style, that is a type style. Okay. A couple weeks ago, and they did radical things like now page 1A is going to be called A1. Ooh, is that like the steak sauce? Wow, saucy page first. And what do they do with the stories? Maybe I didn't notice before, but now that it's in this modern typeset, it's all old news. I'm looking at the pressing guide from last Sunday. The top story is rehash. Oh, it's a remembrance, 1 year anniversary or something. Yeah, and it was a sad story a year ago. But that's news on the front page of a newspaper? This sort of remembrance, this recreation one more time of this particular tragedy from a year ago? Is there nothing in the present that could be on page one? And then a wonderful story about how kids in our schools being visited by people that have animals so they can get up close and see what a living creature looks like that if they live in Dearborn, they might never see it, including the barn owl that's in the big photo there. And that's a wonderful story by Jody Rampala, but I bet she never guessed it would be the biggest in terms of space story on page one of the press and guide. I don't think they pay her extra for that, by the way. And by the way, my daughter, yes, who's a school teacher herself for going on 13 or 14 years in Southfield Public Schools, middle school, they used to call it junior high area. She's a science teacher. But she had a little job on the side when she was in college and right out of college. She and friends had all kinds of animals, and they would put on these shows for a small fee from the school. They would bring in the animals in cages and lecture and demonstrate and let the. So this is not new, okay? This is this happened, by the way, over in summer school at Highview Elementary in Dearborn Heights. But this kind of thing goes on. Now, my daughter has sold her animals years ago, but people do this. Pet lovers, they got a lot of different kinds of animals. They say, well, let's make a little money to pay for the pet food. All the people we need to clean the cages and so on, and the transportation to get the animals to the schools and so on, and maybe some liability insurance they have to take out in case the animals bite some kid and child and get a disease. So in any event, it's a wonderful thing, but the big story? Is this what you want your Sunday paper in terms of local news to be about? I mean, you can enjoy the story. It's a wonderful little story. We used to call it, we still call it, soft news, not hard news. Okay, telecom instructor that I was for all those years, news used to be categorized as either hard or soft. Hard news is news of the day. I mean the day, or maybe yesterday, but events. Terrible events, usually, but things that just happen that you need to know about, whether it's city government or education or, crime. That's hard news, okay? Soft news is sometimes referred to as human interest. It's really nice to know, and it's, oh, people are doing this and doing that and how to grow your roses, and it's all helpful. But you buy a paper for that? I mean, I'm sorry, you can get that on the internet, how to grow your roses. Now, the story about the wildlife safari in Dearborn Heights, that may be on the Dearborn Heights or the Highview Elementary website, or the Dearborn Heights Schools website, even, pictures and so on. This is my final concluding comment about the Dearborn Press and Guide. And there's crime story on the front page. And my problem with crime, I've told people listening to this show for years, crime is decreasing and has for the last 20 years in Dearborn and elsewhere in the United States. There may be some individual exceptions in certain neighborhoods, but in general, we're more crime-free than ever. Is crime an issue you have to campaign about as a politician? No, but people think there's a lot of crime. Why? Because we keep getting it on page one or making it the lead story of a radio or TV show. That's why I don't cover crime. Why? Well, first of all, this crime story is about a trial for a crime that happened months ago. Okay? And it hasn't even started yet. But the story says, oh, it's going to start. What? Who needs to know that? That it hasn't concluded. I mean, yes, maybe we're interested in what sort of, whether or not the person is found guilty or acquitted, and if he's found guilty of the crime, what's his punishment going to be? But excuse me, it's old news, and the trial hasn't started yet. It doesn't need to be there at all. I guess they had nothing else. They did have one story at the bottom of the page about education. Always Katie Hetrick always jumps on really good overviews of what happened at the last Board of Ed meeting. And it's not just one story. It's like four or five stories about Dearborn schools that are all wrapped into her story. But, you know, if it had to be cut, they would just reduce it to the one she started with, the bigger portion at the beginning of her. But they needed to fill the space, so they kept pretty much everything in as they have for Katie's stories, and that's good. You really find out things. Well, we're going to take a moment here to listen to some commentaries from a few of our great opinion leaders. The first one I'm going to play is Jim Hightower's comment about our lawmakers on vacation. And we'll be right back after that. I've got some Jack Lessenberry comments coming up, too, and more top stories about Dearborn and the surrounding area.
When I heard that our Congress critters are taking an extended vacation for all of August and part of September, I had two in Congress reactions, anger and gratitude. Gratitude because their vacation gives us a five-week break from the spectacle of right-wing mad dogs in the House, yapping, foaming at the mouth, and running around in circles. Kill the minimum wage, they howl. Repeal Obamacare. Deport immigrant children. Reinvade Iraq. Impeach Obama. And yada, yada, yada. Yet, nutty as they are, it's also infuriating that these pampered politicos feel entitled to such a vacation. It's another sign of their total disconnect from the hard realities of the workaday majority they're supposed to serve. Earth to Congress, critters! Most American families are being hosed out of the middle class, having to work harder and longer for less pay, no benefits, and not even 2 weeks off, much less a five-week getaway. In the spirit of fairness, though, I should concede that the current do-nothing House has been setting an 8-year performance record in one category of congressional activity, junketeering. Yes, not only does this bunch love to vacation, but it also tiptoes around the ethics rules so lobbyists can pay for their trips. Not since the sleaze days of pay-to-play Uber lobbyist Jack Abramoff have House members taken as many junkets financed by corporate interests. Oh, excuse me, they're called fact-finding missions, not junkets. By whatever name, nearly 1,900 of the free trips were enjoyed last year by lawmakers, their spouses, and staff, paid for by private entities seeking legislative favors. This is Jim Hightower saying, adding to the disgust, House leaders very quietly axed an ethics requirement this year that lawmakers must disclose these travel freebies in their personal financial reports. Yet they wonder why their public approval rating is in the ditch.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
We'll be talking to some of our local legislators, I'm sure, from the WHFR tent location just west of the carnival at Dearborn Homecoming next weekend. Because guess what? They're on vacation too. Yeah. Full-time legislators with about a month and a half, 2 months off every year. And, of course, if you know their work schedule in Lansing, they never schedule anything on Fridays. So they really only work 4 days a week. I mean, they might take something home with them to read at night, like a bill they might want to vote on the next day. But no, that never happens. Just vote the way your lobbyists tell you. You know, I'm being satirical here. That never happens, of course, that they would vote on a bill without reading it all the way through. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, July 25th, 2014. Jay Koronek with you here, going over the big stories of the day. From last Sunday's Press and Guide, and I hope they do get new criteria. I don't care about their font style, folks, but I hope they become a real newspaper again. When I get more in-depth news from other sources about Dearborn and what matters to Dearborn, it makes me think, like, I'll get a few more volunteers and we'll just do it ourselves for you. We'll actually do the real digging and talk to the real people ourselves, because the newspapers, they don't have any full-time writers. They're all part-time, and they don't apparently want to do investigative reporting or digging for facts because they don't have time. They don't have the money to pay reporters for that kind of extra work. And is it really going to sell papers? Nah, who cares about the details? Well, if you're listening to the show, I know you do. I hope you spread the details to other people that don't listen to the show. And, of course, get them to vote. Okay? Big election, primary election, big things to be decided, three big proposals to decide how you're going to vote on them that will affect us and will affect bottom line of dollars spent by various entities, including you. Do you like them or not? How are you going to vote? Tell people about them. I want to try to cover one of those today. Again, I've covered all three a little bit in the past. Of course, I think the biggest contest that will make the most difference for this area in the future will be the choice of the Democrat. This is in the Democratic primary, so if you want to be part of this choice-making situation, you got to vote as a Democrat. And that's fine if you're a Republican, but, you know, still care who the chief exec in Wayne County is going to be. Because I hate to say it, but because of the people who live in Wayne County are primarily Democrats. I mean, they vote primarily Democratic in the big elections. Then whoever the winning Democrat is from this primary for Wayne County chief executive, that's going to be the chief executive. I almost guarantee it in November. I don't bet, but if I did, if I was a betting man, I could bet a lot of money and win a lot of money for anybody that was so uninformed to bet against me. It's going to be a Democrat, and therefore, which is the better Democrat? And I think all of us need to make a decision, even if we're not Democrats, because that's going to really matter. Well, remember, you can get an absentee ballot right now in your local city clerk's office. You can go in, you can ask for it. They give you the application, little small 3x5 piece of paper. You sign it, put down your address, show your ID to them, like your driver's license, and they give you the ballot. You can fill it out right there. There's usually a little booth or something to the side of the city clerk's office in Dearborn. There's six little booths, and give it right back to them. All done voting. No line, no waiting. Do it now. Avoid the rush. Unless you don't know enough. That's the only problem I have. Now, I've already voted, but I'm still finding out information I didn't know about some of these candidates for the Wayne County Chief Executive. I don't think it would change my mind, but I have a lot more to mull over now. So one reason not to vote until Election Day is because you have a better chance, if you keep your eyes and ears open, of learning more and helping you to make the best possible decision. I wanted to mention, because it's also in the City of Dearborn newsletter that went out by email. So, hey, if you didn't sign up at cityofdearborn.org for their email newsletter, I don't think you know this, because it's not in the paper yet. Maybe in Sunday's paper, but that's a little too late. Of course, that primary election is coming up Tuesday, August 5th, a week from this coming Tuesday. But if you want to do that absentee ballot thing, whether you want to vote there or just request it, take the ballot with you, and then return it, you can do that. But there's going to be a special business hours for Dearborn City Clerk Office, and this is probably similar in nearby communities, but not necessarily. Like we know, Dearborn Heights City Hall closes on Friday, so I doubt they're going to be open on Saturday to allow people to do absentee ballots in Dearborn Heights, but I don't know that for sure. It'd be wonderful if they'd be open Friday and Saturday at the City Clerk's Office next week. Anyway, so they're going to be open Saturday, August 2nd, here in Dearborn, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., 9 to 2, for residents to apply for and be given absentee ballots. Now, if you do take it with you, that ballot has to be turned in no later than 8 p.m. on Tuesday, August 5th, the day of the election. You turn it in not at your polling place, but you turn it in back at the city clerk's office. Okay? So if you wanted to do that, fine. Remember that polls will be open a week from Tuesday, August 5th, on August 5th, from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. A lot of people don't vote in a primary. So in a way, your vote means a lot more, doesn't it? Your little one vote is a bigger percentage of whoever wins or loses. But you make a bigger difference. Does that mean anything? Is that an incentive to get people to vote? Your vote will mean a lot more, because it will. It'll be a bigger percentage of the winning or losing number for any candidates or proposals. But tell your friends, tell your neighbors, in the spirit of civic duty, democracy in America, need to inform yourself and vote. And if they say, well, I don't know who's running, I don't know anything about these proposals, well, you need to inform them, okay? It would be the wrong thing for people to go in and just all of a sudden vote no on all the proposals just because I can't figure them out. Well, if you haven't figured them out, voting no on all of them seems like a pretty stupid thing to do. You're going to vote no on something that might be good for people just because you're not able to figure it out. You didn't ask a question. You didn't do a little bit of reading. Now, there's all kinds of good sources. The League of Women Voters in Dearborn Heights, that website, vote411.org. Once you're there, because it's a national League of Women Voters website, you have to put in your address and your city, your state, you know, all of that. And then the district you live in perhaps will come up. And then they will give you several pages of what your ballot's going to be like and questions answered by those candidates on issues that pertain to their candidacy. And so you'll get more than just the ballot. You'll get some information, research that even the newspapers haven't published yet. You think they're going to publish it next week? Or the Sunday edition? I hope so, some of it. But they have done a really rotten job so far. Now, they have a few editorial commentators who have spoken for or against things. But where is a real objective newspaper story? Well, I want to recommend this week's Metro Times to you and their website and mlive.com. They're doing a fantastic job of giving you, in fact, you're not sure about proposal one, they give you five questions, a little poll, and they try to make it simple for you. How do you feel about this? And at the end, because it's five questions, so you're going to probably be more one way than the other. You can't tie, right? They will say, well, based on this, you should be against this proposal, or you should be in favor of it. I thought, wow, they really simplified it, but there's five crucial issues there that you need to decide in general. And then if you add them all up, what does that say about how you should vote on Proposal 1? That's MLive, the letter M for Michigan, I guess, MLive.com. A great news source, by the way, on the internet. And I don't know why newspapers can't do more in-depth things, because that's what I thought newspapers were all about. I thought that's the reason for the newspapers, to get things in print. You know, get those words preserved forever on paper, as well as their website. Okay. Moving on to that story from last Sunday's Press and Guide. Schools plan to offer student education plans. Every Dearborn Public School student will offer input in what and how they learn next year in an effort to motivate students and families to take more ownership of each child's education. Okay, that's sweet and lovable. Get input from the kids. But excuse me, if the kids don't know, or the parents don't know what they're interested in, I mean, what do they want to learn about? Beyonce? I mean, what? I'm just, you know, or some other pop star? Do they really know? I mean, if they watch TV a lot, they don't know. They don't know what really matters. I thought schools, I used to say schools taught traditional values, or at least traditional curriculum. You know, the things that the country is really based on, not stuff that's in the paper every day, but the things that really matters most to the preservation of our democracy and our country and our Constitution and so on. For the good of the children, whether they like it or not, they need to be able to read and write English, whether they want to or not. They need to be able to do mathematics as related to everyday problems and situations, whether they like it or not. Now, this gives them a little bit of an option. I mean, all of us in college, when you go to college, you have required classes and you have elective classes. And the elective classes are ways that you can explore things that are, you don't think it's a major influence in your life, but you can explore them the way the teacher wants you to explore them, okay, not the way you want to explore them, and maybe it'll open up a whole new thing for you. Many people have taken elective classes and discovered this is really what I want to do in life. And they change their major. So they get new required classes instead of the old required classes. But allowing some options, some choices in education is a good thing. But this whole thing about taking ownership of your education, being motivated. Yeah, parents, tell your kids to study what the teachers give them to study. Okay, if you have problems with what that curriculum is, talk to the teachers. Talk to the principal. Get involved. But your kids need to be motivated, and they need to be motivated by you, gentle parents. They probably won't motivate themselves. Pop culture doesn't say get a great education and work hard at studying. There's nothing in pop culture that I know of that says that. Get by with the least, it says. Get by with what's fun. And don't worry about the rest of it. If I'm misdefining pop culture, excuse me, but WHFR, you know, is not about pop culture. We don't play the hits. We play things that are equal to or better. And just like our 2 hours a week of news shows, local news shows, this show and the Tuesday Forum from 1 to 2 o'clock every Tuesday, it's about things we want to challenge you with. I mean, you didn't ask for this information, but maybe you need to know, and you won't be sure until you experience it. Get the idea? So, good for Dearborn Public Schools, and it's always good to try to motivate students and families. It doesn't say here that they're going to change all of their education to what the kids want to study. Didn't say that. So that's fine. I'm sure it'll be a nice, fun little project and give people some options. That's all fine. But this motivation and ownership stuff, you got to do it for yourself. I mean, my parents, my mother got a high school diploma. My dad did not. He went to work for Chrysler Corporation on the line, as they say, with only an eighth grade education. They said, look, you get your homework. We can't help you with it. We you know, things have changed, our ways of doing math and so on. We can't help you with it. It's all up to you, Jay. And I respected that. I respected that they weren't trying to mess up my future and the future of the world with the limit of what they know. I mean, they knew enough to know that they were limited. And they recommended that I study and discover, and I'd be pretty much on my own, but aren't we all, ultimately? you know, so I had to take ownership and be self-motivated in my own education. And I loved to do that because I wanted to make them proud of me. That they did the best they could up to the limits of what they knew and what they could provide. And I wanted to be proud. So I understand that ownership thing and self-motivation, but I don't know if many of our youth do these days. And this may give them a nudge, if not a nudge. Well, the story continues on A3, not 1A. And it's interesting, they have a position in Dearborn who is the, I won't mention the name, doesn't matter, but person who is the supervisor of affective education. Now, that's not effective. It's spelled affective, and that means sort of the emotional side of education, affective education. You know, things that really matter, are affective. And of course, you want your content education to be effective, you know, with the E, but you also want, and so that's pretty sophisticated. I'm quite amazed that the mental state of students, they actually have a supervisor. You supervise affective education. I'm not even sure that's possible, but they have somebody doing it in Dearborn. Trustees approved putting two millage renewals, each for 10 years, on the November ballot. Those are renewals. That's a point to be made here. Renewals, exactly the same amount you're paying now. Even though costs keep going up, inflation and all that. But it's going to be on the November ballot. And they said they're very proud to put it in the November ballot, so it won't be hidden. Everybody can voice their opinion about it and so on. But they really need it. They'll be really messed up if those aren't renewed. But no new money. Same amount. Okay, now it's true that it's millage. So if your home values go up a little bit, well, you'll be paying more in taxes. You'll also be paying more in taxes to the schools. Yeah, not just property tax, but taxes to the schools. So that same millage allotment will generate more money as the property values creep up a little bit each year. And apparently somebody said they've come up 25%, but I said, let me find a for sale sign for my house quick. But I don't think it's come up that much for the average person anywhere in this area. But that's nice to know. It's something to look forward to because we'd be paying more taxes. But it's the same percentage that they need because, you know, costs are going up. That once a month meeting idea instead of twice a month for K-12, they're going to vote on that in August. Okay. And Superintendent Whiston did say that they're going to change their assessment test or achievement test, whatever you want to call them, from STAR math and SRI testing. And they're going to move to something called the Northwest Evaluation Association tests. And they think they're more accurate, especially at the elementary school levels. So that's good. We want accuracy in testing too, right? I don't think it has anything to do with the test that they use, that the state of Michigan requires for their standards and their criteria. But internally, it's good to have a few extra tests to get perspective on exactly what you're doing that's right or could be improved. And, of course, they did move on opening up three kindergarten spots. That's only three children at Long Elementary. And it'll be open for schools of choice enrollment next year. That means those three kids can come from families that apply from other cities to send their kids here to Long Elementary. And that's because the state of Michigan has said that to get $50 per student in best practices money from the state, a little extra incentive there, but $50 a student is like a 10% increase in funding from the state of Michigan. So that's a big deal. Well, Dearborn has to meet 7 of 9 requirements, and one of those is offering schools of choice enrollment for students from outside of Dearborn. It's just interesting that all it takes is three. All it takes is three. I guess it's something. I mean, if people living in Detroit, they know what kinds of problems their schools have. We all know they're in emergency management for the schools as well as the city. And if they can find transportation to get their kids reliably to Dearborn, they should try to do that for the good of the kids. Okay? It's all public education. It won't cost them anything extra, I don't think. Does it? No, I don't think it does. But they have to apply, and they have to qualify. I guess there's qualifications of some sort, too. Just hilarious to me. It only takes three, apparently, to meet one of those criteria for the state of Michigan. Maybe there's some other schools that take enrollments from outside of Dearborn, then its collective number is higher than three, but it seems strange to me. Also, letters to the editor about the chief executive of Wayne County. Somebody writes to Press and Guide letters to the editor last Sunday, and they want to suggest Kevin McNamara as a worthy candidate. And they might be part of his campaign, but it's a Pamela Frucci from Grosseal. And she says that McNamara supported Wayne County Arts, History, and Humanities Council. So she likes that. Okay. Jack Lessenberry in Metro Times this week has stated that something about Bill Wild. Now, he said he thought Warren Evans was probably the best. He thought it was the odds-on favorite to win, and in his, Jack Lessenberry's opinion, probably the best candidate. But he spent some time with the man who was probably his strongest rival, Westland Mayor Bill Wild. And he has some thoughtful ideas, he said, about ethics policies and county budgets. He's been an excellent manager of his city's resources. He eliminated an operating deficit and balanced Westland's budgets. And says he concludes by saying, Wild may not be ready to be county executive. He lacks higher education. He's never gone to college, folks. And he has no experience outside Wayne or Westland. He says, finally, though, his financial savvy, though, might make him an extremely good choice for a top administrative or cabinet post that would be appointed by the person that does win. Okay. Let's see. We have any other candidate issues here? Tom Watkins in Press and Guide from this Wednesday, July 23rd, 2 days ago, says you should vote yes on Proposition 1. Again, go to MLive.com, too, and take their little 5-question poll on that, and that'll help you decide about Proposition 1. I'm suspicious about that because I just discovered who the candidate for governor of Michigan in November is going to be from the Green Party of Michigan, Green Party United States, Michigan chapter, of course. His name is Paul Homeniuk, Homeniuk. Going to try to get him for an interview here. But he's already issued a press release from his site, which is paulhomeniuk.com or something. I'll get it for you in the future. Just look up Green Party of Michigan, and they have all their candidates listed there, a governor, lieutenant governor, and so on. You say, but they're not in the primaries, are they? No, they're not. Why not? Because the Democrats and Republicans won't let them be part of the primaries. So they had to pick their own candidates for governor and other offices, just like the Libertarian Party of Michigan, also a big party. They had to pick their own candidates. They couldn't do the primary thing because the Democrats and Republicans don't want to give them the publicity. They're afraid if you learn that there were candidates out there in these other parties, you might find out something about them and what they stood for, and maybe you'd vote for them. Oh, my God. Then it would be the end of the two-party system, or as some people call it, the one-party system. Because is there really that much difference between Democrats and Republicans? Oh, Fox News would like you to believe there is, and so would MSNBC. But a lot of us, independent minds, don't think so. Anyway, Paul Homeniuk, the Green Party of the U.S. candidate for Michigan governor, says by his analysis and state analyses, if Proposal 1 is passed, the state is going to lose at least $500 million by 2025. Yeah, $500 million, because the revenue from the taxes on these machines in people's businesses is not going to come in. Now, the cities are going to get money from use taxes. Okay, use taxes. I won't go into that, where that comes from. But for the time being, it's promised that they will get the full amount they used to be getting from the personal property tax. And I really hate some of these ads, and there's so many ads, mainly paid for by businesses, that just don't want to pay more taxes. Oh, this poor man bought a grinding machine in 1966 for his company. He's still paying taxes on it. Well, guess what, folks? It still works. He still owns it, and it's still working. It's still doing profit for him. Okay? Who cares if he bought it in 66? It's still part of the value of his company. And we decided in Michigan to tax the value of the company in their property, the land, and the stuff on the land. It makes sense to me, at least it did originally to a lot of other people, or it wouldn't have been passed, right? So there's starting to be so much misinformation that I kind of agree with Paul Homeniuk, and he's the only negative person, well, other than the mayor in MLive.com, let's see, the mayor of Warren, Mayor Jim Fouts, F-O-U-T-S, he doesn't think Proposal 1 is a good idea either. But all the other mayors do, and Mayor O'Reilly even has a little video on YouTube, and he's all for, also on cityofdearborn.org, he's for this passing, because it will secure the money coming to the cities. But as Paul Homeniuk says, it's a gift to business again. It's probably not going to result in many jobs, and the state's going to be out $500 million. Is there really enough use taxes to go around? If you're going to pay the city from use taxes, how are we going to pay the Treasury and the state of Michigan to keep the prisons going or aid to education or anything else? So I hadn't read this point of view before. And so the Green Party candidate for governor urges every Michigan voter to vote no on Proposal 1. Wow. So read and discover, see what you think. Concluding here, the journal for today, there's Roar on the River, another great event at Elizabeth Park in Trenton this weekend. No, that was last